Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Last year, a survey conducted by the National Hispanic Media Coalition found that at least 30% of non-Hispanic Americans mistakenly believe that half of the nation's 50 million Hispanics were illegal immigrants with large families and little education. Our guest says these kinds of negative stereotypes can exacerbate what is already an intimidating environment, the college campus. Jennifer DeLeon is the editor of a new anthology. It's called Wise Latinas, Writers on Higher Education. She's an author, an educator in the Boston Public Schools, and an instructor at Grub Street Creative Writing Center. But Jennifer, pleasure to meet you.
You too, as well.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for coming in. So you took your title, Wise Latinas, from Sonia Sotomayor, Supreme Court Justice. Quote, you have that at the tip of your tongue. If not, I got it right here.
Yes, she says, well, I would hope a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion than a white male who hasn't lived that life.
And that caused her a lot of problems in her confirmation hearing, we should say.
Yeah. Rush Limbaugh went crazy over the whole thing. But so why did you, I mean, I assume she's a huge inspiration because she's talked a lot about growing up as a Latina. So that's why it became the title of your book?
Yes, exactly. She's an inspiration to me, but also I think to many women. She's an anomaly on the Supreme Court. She's one of four justices that have not been white males in the entire history of the Supreme Court. So she faces many barriers, and her experience can really be inspirational to everyone, actually.
Well, she's also talked about something that's so right on target with what your whole book of these essays about, of women in higher education. Well, she talked about when she went to Princeton, and she called it, this would have been in the early 1970s, she felt like she was, quote, a visitor landing in an alien country. And this is what a lot of the women talk about in your book.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I'll tell you, when I first went to Connecticut College, even before I enrolled, when I was looking at schools, I felt that I was visiting a country club. And I really do feel that way. It was across the ocean, across the Coast Guard. You could eat whatever you want. You could stay up until whatever time you wanted. Nobody told you what to do. My father wasn't there. And I just felt free in a way that I hadn't felt until then.
And it also does look like a country club. I took one of my kids there. That is one gorgeous campus with a gym overlooking the river or ocean or whatever it is down there.
The ocean.
Yeah, very nice.
Jennifer DeLeon, let's step back just to give people a sense of the world that we're talking about. You mentioned in the foreword to your book, which is beautifully written.
Thank you.
I should say, great stories about you and your mother, which I love, which we'll talk about
in
a minute.
We're in tears here.
You said only 28% of college-age Latinos are enrolled in universities. And I read that is compared to 45% of whites, 64% of Asians, 34% of Blacks. And the numbers were frighteningly low. And then I read this Pew Center thing, which I couldn't sort of fit together. A record 7 in 10, 69% Hispanic high school graduates in the class of 2012 enrolled in college, 2 percentage points higher than the rate for their white counterparts. And then I realized, I assume we're the way those things work is the rate of high school graduates who are Latinos go to college is high, but the percentage of college-age Latinos who are high school graduates is very low. That's where the disconnect is, right?
Right, right. There's also a disconnect when you consider matriculation versus graduation. There are students who have the courage and, of course, the background to be able to apply to competitive schools, and they enroll, but they drop out after the first semester. They think, this isn't for me. This is a foreign country. This is strange. I'm in a different universe. And so, unfortunately, while the numbers show that more Latinos, gratefully, are enrolling in college, it's not the same as them matriculating. And then the numbers just get worse when it goes to graduate school and PhD level.
Is this, I am generally not a cup half full kind of guy, but I'm a cup almost totally empty kind of guy. But when you read these statistics, I think you may have even mentioned this. I'm not sure if it was you or somebody else I was reading this morning. 30% of America is going to be Latino by the middle of this century.
Exactly.
So since the numbers are exploding like this, would I be naive to think things are getting better or they're not? I mean, Deval Patrick spends an hour here every month. I would say once out of every two appearances, he talks about the achievement gap between kids of color and white kids in the schools. They're making some progress, but are we making a lot of progress or no?
I would say we're moving in the right direction. But I will say that there are factors we're not looking at. Test scores are one way that we can look at it. And as a Boston Public School teacher, I teach at the Boston Teachers Union School, which I love. You know, we're definitely working to help students have those tools in their toolbox. I mean, they have to be able to perform well on standardized tests. They have to be able to write an essay really well. That said, there's an element of cultural capital that is equally important so that when you have internships here at WGBH, you know, you feel confident and competent. You're not thinking, oh, everybody's looking at me strangely, or what are you bringing for lunch, or what is it that you're reading? You're different. I don't look like any of you. So there is that element. I know when I did internships at the State House, I felt, again, like an anomaly. And then over time, you build that confidence. So then when I do my next internship at Ms. Magazine in New York City, I think, okay, I belong here. I feel a little bit more comfortable. And then an internship at the United Nations, I think, okay, I can do this. So there's a snowball effect. It builds. But I think we have to give kids the opportunities to build that. You can't just say, go to college. You're going to be great.
Now, I hope they paid you in your internship at Ms. Magazine.
They paid me with experience. And
I'm disappointed in Gloria Steinem. I thought she would pay people for it because you mentioned that you met her when you were there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I did publish a couple of articles, and those did pay.
Good.
I remember I was so excited, a dollar a word. I was rich.
But can we stay on this whole issue of this comfort zone thing you mentioned a minute ago? Is the comfort zone built internally, or are the institutions you're describing conscious about providing a more welcoming environment? Since your book is about higher ed, Latinos in the higher ed, universities obviously want their numbers to look good. They want to look like they're diverse, hopefully for good reasons, but at minimum for bad reasons, doesn't matter for purposes of this. Do they then work to create an environment where someone who does feel like whatever it is Sotomayor said, a visitor landing in an alien country, that they feel like they're a visitor, but it's not an alien country? Or is it all on the human themselves to create their, you know what I mean?
Right,
create their
right.
comfort zone? What's the deal?
I mean, I think it's a combination. Imagine you go to a university starting tomorrow, and everybody's told you, you can handle it, you're great, you're going to be amazing, your scores allowed you to get in, full scholarship, great. You go, and every last person is a female. You know, you might be, again, told, you're fine, you can handle it, sit in the same class, hang out with these people, but they're all female. So as much as you're given those positive messages, the reality is going to take some muscle work. I mean, ultimately, seeing yourself represented by the professors at the campus matter, not just people cleaning the restrooms and all of that. Seeing yourself represented in the literature that you read, so that if all of the articles are published by white men, you might think, well, I don't really have a place in academia, so why pursue a PhD? No one's going to take me seriously.
Well, you know what I was thinking, too, that, you know, obviously there's some similarities between the African-American experience when African-Americans first went to college, and but most of those African-Americans were African-Americans. Latinos are all over the map. You could be from Guatemala, as your family was, or from, you know, any other. There's so many different cultural things. That's an issue, I would think, as well. You're not a monolithic group.
Right. And, in fact, that's another barrier that I think many Latinas face when they go to college, Latinos as well. People put them in a box. They assume they speak Spanish. They assume they're first-generation college students. They assume X, Y, Z. So there's a lot of debunking these myths when you get to school. And I think that, you know, again, the more Latinos we have in school, the more it becomes normal. But the book I really want to my goal for this book is to provide stories, you know, narrative, because these statistics, I think, are so valuable, and they ultimately do create change and provide funding for organizations that can help facilitate that. But there's nothing like the story. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Well, tell us about the young woman that went to Vanderbilt.
Oh, yeah, Toni Plummer. Yes. So she Blanca Torres. Apologies. Yes,
okay.
She went to Vanderbilt. Her parents worked at a potato peeling plant in the Northwest. They were from Mexico. She always knew that she would pursue education. They would drive by the local community college, and her parents would say to her, that's where you go after high school. So they had it in their mind. And again, that's a stereotype that Latino parents don't want their kids to go to college. Of course, that's not true for all of them, although leaving home is kind of a big deal. And so she, on a whim, applied to Vanderbilt. She gets in and she goes. It was not a school that she had dreamt about her whole life. She didn't know too much about it. But then when she gets there, she starts to doubt herself. She saw all these Vandy girls with, you know, long hair and these outfits and high heels. And she thought, I can't compete with them. What do I have going on here? So, again, there are a number of times where you can turn around and pivot. But hopefully, you know, these stories will help.
So when did you get out of Connecticut College?
I graduated in 2001.
2001, so not that long ago. So did you have a group of other Latina women when you were there?
So
big groups, tiny groups?
Small group, not at Connecticut College. There are friends of mine that I went to high school with, and every time I came home from on break, we'd go to Starbucks and we'd hang out for 6 hours. Just talk, and share these stories and our cuentos and just kind of, I don't know, exhale. At Connecticut College, I had a couple of mentors who were older, senior sisters. But again, there's this kind of pressure I felt too, actually, on the flip side, when I went to Connecticut College to only interact with students of color. And that had never been my experience. I grew up in Framingham, and I just felt really comfortable with all sorts of people from different backgrounds. So there's some backlash for that, too.
You know, if part of we're talking to Jennifer DeLeon, whose book called Wise Latinas, Writers Are in Higher Education, it's edited. It's a terrific forward introduction by her, which we're talking in part about. You know, we've talked about how the institutions cannot be welcoming and how society at large can have all these stereotypical, horrible thoughts about Latinos. But there's also a cultural barrier in many things. Another thing you write about, you talk about this essay, Only Daughter, written by Sandra Cisneros, who writes, after 4 years in college and 2 more in graduate school and still no husband, my father shakes his head even now and says, I wasted all that education. So it's not just the outside world, it's the inner world that one has to contend. You said in your thing, education was like a religion in your household, but obviously it was not a religion in Sandra Cisneros' household.
Exactly. You know, you're hitting on a great point, which is this irony that parents want the best for their kids until they have to leave. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think with the Cuban-American experience, it's very fascinating because so much of their history has been centered on staying together. And, you know, the separation has been very political, literally and figuratively. And so the fact that they would be in Florida, in Miami, and want to go to school at Mount Holyoke, say, like one of the contributors writes, it's unheard of. And she kept that glossy catalog of Mount Holyoke for years until she got married, because she never went to the Northeast for college. And it was something that she gave up to be closer to home. And I think she went to Arkansas, 10 hours away, and it was still considered going far.
So one of the things that Sonia Sotomayor complained about at Princeton, this again was the 70s, so it was a long time ago, not a single full-time Latino professor in a class on Latin America. I would presume that that was different by the time you got to Connecticut College, or maybe not.
Right.
Were there any full-time Latino professors at Connecticut College when you were there?
There was one. I know she was visiting professor, and it was a women's studies course that I took. It was actually a course on whiteness, and so that's kind of the...
I've taught that course many times in my career, actually.
Yeah, Professor Carillo Roe, I remember.
And that was it. So there was one.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
And she was visiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, by the way, when you say it was a long time ago, 1970, what was Barack Obama protesting about, leading demonstrations at Harvard Law School not so long ago?
No blacks.
No black full-tenure until the Derek Bell situation.
So you teach kids K through 8, right,
yes,
the school you're at. So I want, because in the Boston public schools now are largely black and Latina, largely minority. So I wonder if you see in these little boys and little girls that you interact with all the time, difference of being more self-assured, more confident, or is it just because they're in that environment and it's the same thing when they get to college 5 or 10 years down the road?
I've taught every grade level, elementary, middle school, high school. I did a Teach for America program in San Jose, California.
Oh, neat.
I taught at UMass Boston, adjuncting, and it's a really rich question and not something I can kind of boil down. But I would say that my general impression is that we still have a lot of work to do with the confidence level. There are students who have been born in this country and have gone only to English-speaking schools and, you know, are being raised in our culture here, but still lack that kind of agency that I see in students that I went to Connecticut College with. That said, they're brilliant and they're smart and they're sassy and they're unstoppable. But they really need to be given the opportunities and the tools to exercise those muscles, you know, being exposed to internships, to field trips, just being around environments they're not maybe always familiar with, or seeing the ones that they're involved with as an asset, you know, speaking two languages is a great thing. The fact that my dad can, you know, build a shed in our backyard, that's a really cool thing. It's not that, oh, he's a blue-collar worker. You know, so the language we give to these kinds of labels is really powerful.
But when a kid of a certain age starts watching the news, or even if they don't watch the news, the television or the radio is on in their house, and they hear the news sort of by osmosis kind of thing, and the lead story almost every day is about a war over immigration in this country and some of the most grotesque language being used about people who come across the border and what should happen to them. And does that not trickle down and have as negative effect as all the positive things you're talking about? I mean, it's a pretty tough environment to grow up in as a kid.
It is. And I think they know about immigration in a different way. They're not reading the headlines per se. They're not analyzing the news. But they have an uncle who just showed up in their living room one day. And he's staying with them for 3 months before he moves on to the job that he's searching for. You know, so they're interacting with immigration on that level. In my class with my eighth graders, we watch movies like El Norte, which is an old film about a Guatemalan brother and sister who move from Guatemala to Los Angeles. And they have to crawl through this tunnel with rats. And it's a really sad story, a really compelling movie. And then we read The Circuit by Francisco Jimenez, which is about a migrant farm worker in California. And then this documentary that now I'm blanking on the name. But it's an amazing documentary that follows two 14-year-old kids from Honduras, which, as you know, right now is all in the
terrible
news. Terrible.
Yes.
What's happening to the migrant and has been happening. You know, it's certainly not new. But we follow these two kids and Which Way Home is the name of the documentary. And they are aboard these trains and they're making their way through Mexico into the United States. And for my students, it's the first time that they're actually seeing this in a way that feels real to them because the students are so young. I mean, the boys.
Yeah.
So they're saying, oh, this isn't just my 35-year-old uncle. This is a kid who's 13. I could be on top of a train right now. So we talk a lot about that. But in response to your question, I mean, do they see themselves? Is their confidence kind of wrinkled by seeing all these news headlines? I hope not. I think the average teenager is also a little narcissistic, so they're not very much looking at it that way, is my take anyway.
Well, congratulations on this fantastic book,
which great,
I learned a lot from. Jennifer DeLon, the name of the book, the name of the book is Wise Latinas, Writers on Higher Education. Jennifer is an educator in the public schools in Boston and an instructor at the Grub Street Creative Writing Center. Goof that up. Anyway, thank you so much for being
with us.
Jennifer. And you can catch her Friday at the Harvard Bookstore in collaboration with the Grub Street Launch Lab at 7 o'clock for a panel discussion. To learn more, go to harvard.com. Thanks again for being with us. Up next, we're going to be joined by Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe. He joins us on his recent trip to Northern Ireland, where he's been looking at how the Boston College Oral History Project has backfired. Stay tuned for that conversation next on 89.7.